Bebout?
Here.
Boner?
Here.
Burns?
Here.
Case?
Here.
Christensen?
Here.
Coe?
Here.
Cooper?
Here.
Kraft?
Here.
Dockstetter?
Here.
Driscoll?
Here.
Emmerich?
Here.
Escabel?
Here.
Geis?
Here.
Hastert?
Here.
Hicks?
Here.
Johnson?
Here.
Kinski?
Here.
Landon?
Here.
Meyer?
Here.
Pappas?
Here.
Perkins?
Here.
Peterson?
Here.
Ross?
Here.
Rothfuss?
Here.
Scott?
Here.
Von Fladern?
Here.
Wasserberger?
Here.
President Nicholas?
Oh, here. What? Yeah, I'm right here.
30 present. What? 30 present.
Thank you. The prayer is with Father Cronkleton.
Let us pray. Heavenly Father, we have been busy this week about the people's business. We've been working in committees, laboring here on the floor of the Senate, conferring with colleagues, and hearing from constituents and others about many concerns. The days have been long and demanding, and they keep us away from family and friends. Help us, therefore, not to become lethargic or distracted, but rather to keep our minds sharp, our spirits high, and our attitudes positive. Continue to pour forth your grace into our hearts so that we might have the knowledge, wisdom, and good judgment needed to fulfill our responsibility of being statesmen. We ask this and all things in your holy name. Amen.
Amen.
Please join with the pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Label.
We're at that point of business, reading the journal. If the reading clerk will please read the journal committee report.
Mr. President, your journal committee reports that the journal of February 10, 2016 has been read and recommends that it be approved. Senator Wasserberger, chairman.
Are there any objections? There being none, the report is adopted. We don't have a nurse of the day. We do have a doctor of the day is Evan Norby. I don't know if Evan's here. He's a DO from here in Cheyenne. Today in history, in 1917, the legislature authorized the Commissioner of Labor. Today is day four of the proposed 20-day session. Tomorrow is the last day for bills introductions. So we had the 24-hour requirement, so the bills that hit today, make sure your jackets are signed, and then we'll get them up and assign them to committees tomorrow. Okay, I'm told they're all signed. Thank you. We're at that business of introduction, reading, and referencing of bills, first reading bills. House Bill 72, first reading of the bill. Yeah, let's actually, I was trying to think of something smart out to say, and I couldn't come up with anything. Senate File 72. I'll bet you do.
Senate File 72, 70 miles per hour speed limit, state highways, sponsored by Senator Christensen.
Senator Christensen.
Move introduction of Senate File 72 and ask for your favorable consideration. Members of the Senate, this is a bill that changes our maximum speed limit on state highways from 65 to 70. If you recall, we have been working on this for the last couple of sessions. Former Speaker of the House, it was his exit bill, and since then we tweaked with it last year. Well, here we are again this year. The intent is just rather than continue to study it in bits and pieces, and there has already been a fair amount of resources expended to go ahead and just raise the speed limit from 65 to 70 on state highways. Doesn't change anything about the ability to lower those or maintain lower speed limits that may already be there. And I anticipate that while there is a ramp-up, there'll be a ramp-up cost to this. It is the cost that we would already be addressing the other way, but it'll just reduce a fair amount of this continued contracted study program that I learned about when I talked to the engineer. I'd ask your support for this so that we can all get to the legislature quicker when we need to.
Roll call.
Anderson?
Aye.
Aye. Barnard?
Aye.
Aye. Bebout?
Aye.
Aye. Boner?
Aye.
Aye. Burns?
Aye.
Aye. Case?
Aye.
Aye. Christensen?
Aye.
Aye. Coe?
Aye.
Aye. Cooper?
Aye.
Aye. Kraft?
Aye.
Aye. Dockstetter?
Aye.
Aye. Driscoll?
Aye.
Aye. Emmerich?
Aye.
Aye. Escobel?
Aye.
Aye. Geis?
Aye.
Castert?
Aye.
Aye. Hicks?
Aye.
Aye. Johnson?
Aye.
Aye. Kinski?
Aye.
Aye. Landon?
Aye.
Aye. Meyer?
Aye.
Aye. Pappas? Aye. Perkins?
Aye.
Aye. Peterson?
Aye.
Aye. Ross?
Aye.
Aye. Rothfuss?
Aye.
Aye. Scott?
No.
No. Spanfladern?
Aye.
Aye. Wasserberger?
Aye.
President Nicholas?
Aye.
Aye. Closing vote? Closing vote closed. 29 aye, 1 no.
Senate File 72, having received a two-thirds majority vote, is referred to Committee Number 9, Minerals and Economic Development. Senate File 73, first reading of the bill.
Senate File 73, Welfare Fraud Prevention, sponsored by Senator Christensen.
Senator Christensen.
Mr. President, I move Senate File 73 and ask for your favorable consideration. Again, members of the body or the Senate, Senate File 73 is about providing enhanced eligibility and identity verification processes, providing for referral of cases to other agencies. That means there needs to be any discipline or corrections taken, and requiring an annual report. Pretty simple. What the bill really does is it takes some of the processes that are in practice and spells out that we're serious about them. It also gives the Department of Family Services the tools to more actively go after people who are committing welfare fraud. Not only do we verify and make sure that the right people are getting into the program, we check more often and make sure that the right people are still in the program. Looked around the country and found some of the other states that have enacted this. They had folks that were living out of state that would return once in a while to re-verify. And so this opportunity, if we're able to clean up our roles a little bit, it provides more money for the folks who actually need it and pulls the folks who don't qualify or shouldn't be there off of those roles. This is not changing the thresholds. It's not, you know, going to cut out people who deserve it or currently qualified recipients. It's just a way of tightening it up a little bit and getting rid of the excess, with the goal that we'll have then those extra resources to provide to the people who do need it or other programs that are associated to this. I'd ask for your support.
Roll call.
Anderson?
Aye.
Aye. Barnard?
Aye.
Aye. Bebout?
Aye.
Aye. Boner?
Aye.
Aye. Burns?
Aye.
Aye. Case?
Aye.
Aye. Christensen?
Aye.
Aye. Coe?
Aye.
Aye. Cooper?
Aye.
Aye. Kraft?
Aye.
Aye. Dockstetter?
Aye.
Aye. Driscoll?
Aye.
Aye. Emmerich?
Aye.
Aye. Escobel?
No.
No. Geis?
Aye.
Aye. Hastert?
Aye.
Aye. Hicks?
Aye.
Aye. Johnson?
Aye.
Aye. Kinski? Kinski?
Aye.
Aye. Landon?
Aye.
Aye. Meyer?
Aye.
Aye. Pappas?
Aye.
Aye. Perkins?
Aye.
Aye. Peterson?
Aye.
Aye. Ross?
Aye.
Aye. Rothfuss?
No.
No. Scott?
Aye.
Aye. Von Platern?
Aye.
Aye. Wasserberger?
Aye.
Aye. President Nicholas?
Aye.
Aye. Closing vote. Closing vote closed. 28 aye, 2 no.
Senate File 73, having received two-thirds majority vote, is hereby referred to Committee Number 10, Labor. Senate File 74, first reading of the bill.
Senate File 74, State Miners Hospital Board Employees, sponsored by Senator Hastert.
Senator Hastert.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move Senate File 74 and ask for your favorable recommendation. Members of the Senate, when we established the Miners Hospital Board years ago, we authorized the executive director and one assistant. And since that time, they have been splitting the time up between Campbell and Sweetwater counties, and that's principally where the main number of miners are. And the workload has been increasing tremendously. And then now, because of some new federal regulations and IRS regulations, members of the people, miners that have health savings accounts and those kind of things will no longer be eligible, unfortunately, for miners hospital benefits. But this is going to increase the workload dramatically. And what this bill does is allow, instead of the two part-time, it is going to allow two full-time employees, one based in Sweetwater, one in Campbell counties. And the figure of in the bill is for the biennium to bring those up to full-time employees. They're going to be required mandatory private medical insurance updates every year. So it's just the increase in workload and allowing for coverage around the state. And that was the whole principle behind creating the Miners Hospital Board, was to better serve the miners. I ask for your favorable consideration.
Roll call.
Anderson?
Aye.
Aye. Barnard?
Aye.
Aye. Bebout?
Aye.
Aye. Boner?
Aye.
Aye. Burns?
Aye.
Aye. Case?
No.
No. Christensen?
Aye.
Aye. Coe?
Aye.
Aye. Cooper?
Aye.
Aye. Kraft?
Aye.
Aye. Dockstetter?
No.
No. Driscoll?
Aye.
Aye. Emmerich?
Aye.
Aye. Esquivel?
Aye.
Aye. Geis?
Aye.
Aye. Hastert?
Aye.
Aye. Hicks?
Aye.
Aye. Johnson?
Aye.
Aye. Kinski?
No.
No. Landon?
Aye.
Aye. Meyer?
Aye.
Aye. Pappas?
Aye.
Aye. Perkins? Perkins?
Aye.
Aye. Peterson?
Aye.
Aye. Ross?
Aye.
Aye. Rothfuss?
Aye.
Aye. Scott?
Aye.
Aye. Von Platern?
Aye.
Wasserberger?
Aye.
Aye. President Nicholas?
Aye.
Aye. Closing vote. Closing vote closed. 27 aye, 3 no.
Senate File 74, having received a two-thirds majority vote, is referred to Committee Number 9, Minerals. Senate File 75, first reading of the bill.
Senate File 75, Criminal Trespass to Collect Data Amendments, sponsored by Senator Hicks.
Senator Hicks.
Mr. President, I'd move for introduction, Senate File 75. Members of the body, what this does is clear up some of the confusion last year, and let me explain what happened. This is a very similar version that went out of the Senate last year. There was significant amendments made to it in the House. Some of those were modified in conference committee, but what it effectively did is create a certain level of ambiguity associated with what lands this was actually pertained to. Part of the litigation in the federal court right now that was brought was, and I think our AG's office argued that it may or does not include public lands. It's clearly could be interpreted as ambiguous. So what this amendment to that legislation last year does is try to address that issue and make it absolutely clear where the law applies, and the law applies to private lands. With that, I would ask for your favorable consideration of a yes vote.
Roll call.
Anderson?
Aye.
Aye. Barnard?
Aye.
Aye. Bebout?
Aye.
Aye. Boner?
Aye.
Aye. Burns?
Aye.
Aye. Case?
Aye.
Aye. Christensen?
Aye.
Aye. Coe?
Aye.
Aye. Cooper?
Aye.
Aye. Kraft?
Aye.
Aye. Dockstetter?
Aye.
Driscoll?
Aye.
Aye. Emmerich?
Aye.
Aye. Escabel?
Aye.
Aye. Geis?
Aye.
Aye. Hastert?
Aye.
Aye. Hicks?
Aye.
Aye. Johnson?
Aye.
Aye. Kinski?
Aye.
Aye. Landon?
Aye.
Aye. Meyer? Aye. Pappas?
Aye.
Aye. Perkins?
Aye.
Aye. Peterson?
Aye.
Aye. Ross?
Aye.
Aye. Rothfuss?
Aye.
Aye. Scott?
Aye.
Aye. Von Platern?
Aye.
Aye. Wasserberger?
Aye.
Aye. President Nicholas?
Aye.
Aye. Closing vote. Closing vote closed. 30 aye.
Senate file 75, having received a two-thirds majority vote, is hereby referred to committee number one, Judiciary. Senate file 76, first reading of the bill.
Senate file 76, civil trespass to collect data amendments, sponsored by Senator Hicks.
Senator Hicks.
Mr. President, I'd move for introduction, Senate File 76, Civil Trespass to Collect Data. Members of the body, if you remember last year, there was really two components of this. One was the criminal side. That's the bill that we just disposed of for introduction. This is the civil side. The language is almost mirror through this. This brings it into the civil court. The same issue has arisen because the bills were mirror image of each other or intended to be a mirror image of each other. With that, I'm not going to delay and go through another protracted discussion. This, again, clarifies that issue, that this only pertains to the collection of data on private land. I would ask for your favorable consideration of a yes vote.
Roll call.
Anderson?
Aye.
Aye. Barnard?
Aye.
Aye. Bebout?
Aye.
Aye. Boner?
Aye.
Aye. Burns?
Aye.
Aye. Case? Aye. Christensen?
Aye.
Aye. Coe?
Aye.
Aye. Cooper?
Aye.
Kraft?
Aye.
Aye. Dockstetter?
Aye.
Aye. Driscoll?
Aye.
Aye. Emmerich?
Aye.
Aye. Escabel?
Aye.
Aye. Geis?
Aye.
Aye. Hastert?
Aye.
Aye. Hicks?
Aye.
Aye. Johnson?
Aye.
Aye. Kinski?
Aye.
Aye. Landon?
Aye.
Aye. Meyer? Aye. Pappas?
Aye.
Aye. Perkins?
Aye.
Aye. Peterson?
Aye.
Aye. Ross?
Aye.
Aye. Rothfuss?
Aye.
Aye. Scott?
Aye.
Aye. Van Platern?
Aye.
Aye. Wasserberger?
Aye.
President Nicholas?
Aye.
Aye. Closing vote. Closing vote closed. 30 aye.
Senate file 76, having received a two-thirds majority vote, is hereby referred to committee number one, Judiciary. Senate file 77, first reading of the bill.
Senate File 77, Rural Development Council, sponsored by Senator Peterson.
Senator Peterson.
President, I would move Senate File 77 for introduction, Rural Development Council, and ask for the body's favorable consideration. Mr. President, this is the council that has existed for the last 15 to some odd years. I've served as a member of that council for the last 15 years, and it's the council that basically did the community assessments, county assessments for the rural areas of the state and some of the larger cities. Great service to our communities and got them in line with projects, both infrastructure and economic development. It's served a great purpose. What happened here recently, in fact, after our last session, disagreement on how the board should be formed with the state participating with funding, as we have, to the tune of $750,000 to run our staff. We had an executive director that retired. This is what forced the issue. The executive director retired. Our council started to look for replacement, and the business council informed us that that was not our job, that we were not an independent board, that they were formed under the business council. So the disagreements and letters started, And June 1st, we got our letter noting that we were a disbanded organization and no longer needed. So I went to the governor and insisted that if that was the case, that the $750,000 should be put back into the general fund. But what this is just our decision here today. If you think the Rural Development Council has a place, if you think it was effective, this reorganizes it to take care of and address the independency, plus has governor's appointments, legislative appointments to take care of the funding that the state provides. And this was, a creation from the federal government during the Sullivan era as he was governor. It's been around that long. And what this bill does is try to bring it back. I had every intention of just transferring that money, but our overexuberant JAC got to the money before I did. And understanding the situation that we're in this budget session, and this is the yeah, you did your job very well. So what this bill does, you look back at the fiscal note, you'll see this. There's the $750,000. I know it's a very hard request, but this is a program that's existed for some time, and now we make the decision whether we continue it or kill it right here. I appreciate your confidence in this program and your support with this bill. Thank you.
I suspect you meant to say they were exuberant, not over-exuberant. Roll call.
Anderson?
No.
No. Barnard?
Aye.
Aye. Bebout?
No.
No. Boner?
Aye.
Aye. Burns?
No.
No. Case? No. Christensen? No. Coe?
No.
No. Cooper?
No.
No. Kraft?
Aye.
Aye. Dockstetter? No. Driscoll?
Aye.
Aye. Emmerich?
No.
No. Esquivel?
No.
No. Geis?
No.
No. Hastert?
Aye.
Aye. Hicks?
Aye.
Aye. Johnson?
No.
No. Kinski?
No.
No. Landon?
No.
No. Meyer?
Aye.
Aye. Pappas?
No.
No. Perkins?
No.
No. Peterson?
Aye.
Aye. Ross?
No.
No. Rothfuss?
No.
No. Scott?
No.
No. Von Platern?
No.
No. Wasserberger?
No.
President Nick, I'm sorry, Wasserberger, no. President Nicholas?
No.
No. Case, no to aye.
It's really, really uncomfortable to be out there with a majority.
I'm sorry, Christensen, no to aye.
You keep changing your votes and Senator Case will have to go back the other direction.
Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 10 aye, 20 no.
Senate File 77, having failed to receive two-thirds majority vote, Senate File 77 has failed introduction. Senate File 78, first reading.
Senate File 78, Office of the Consumer Advocate, repeal date, sponsored by Senator Bebout.
Senator Bebout.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. President. I move for the introduction of Senate File 78. Ask for your favorable consideration. Members of the Senate, you know, when we knew we were coming down here, we knew we had budget revenue issues, and of course we can always talk about across-the-board cuts, but it's always good to look at individual programs. And so when I looked at state government to try to come up with some ideas, one of the ones that I came up with, the Officer Consumer Advocate. And I will tell you, Mr. President, that my good colleague from Laramie County, when he carried this bill, the chairman of the Appropriations Committee, it was well-intended and had a lot of good things that it did for the state of Wyoming. But as I looked into it further and I looked at the mission, it said that it represents the interest of Wyoming citizens and all classes of utility customers. And that's where the problem I have with this particular agency is, Mr. President. Not saying that necessarily we need to do away with them, but we certainly need to take a look at it because I just don't think they're doing their job. I went back and looked at, like, at my electrical bill from my particular house in Riverton, and I adjusted it over from, like, 2008 to today, and, and my rates have gone up more than inflation, and so where's my consumer advocacy board to try to help me? They're the same thing that's happened on the commercial side. There's a lot of people out there that pay for electricity that are upset with the direction of this particular agency. But rather than just say we're going to eliminate them, what I did in this bill, Mr. President, if you look at it, the effective date was 2023, and I'm not sure why my colleague wanted 2023, but I moved that up to 2017. But yet, to give them a fair shake and to see if maybe this is a program that we just need to make better rather than eliminate, I asked it to be referred to the Joint Minerals Committee for interim work to give them their chance to come to that Minerals Committee and plead their case that, yes, you know, maybe we need a change of direction. Maybe we need to have our you-know-what kick to get back on what we're supposed to do. But if not, then let's just do away with it. I ask for your favorable consideration.
Roll call.
Anderson?
Aye.
Aye. Barnard?
Aye.
Aye. Bebout?
Aye.
Aye. Boner?
Aye.
Aye. Burns?
Aye.
Aye. Case?
Aye.
Aye. Christensen?
Aye.
Aye. Coe?
Aye.
Aye. Cooper?
Aye.
Aye. Kraft?
No.
No. Dockstetter?
Aye.
Aye. Driscoll?
Aye.
Aye. Emmerich?
Aye.
Aye. Escobel? No. Geis?
No.
No. Hastert?
No.
No. Hicks?
Aye.
Aye. Johnson?
No.
No. Kinski?
Aye.
Aye. Landon?
Aye.
Aye. Meyer?
Aye.
Aye. Pappas?
Aye.
Aye. Perkins?
Aye.
Aye. Peterson?
Aye.
Aye. Ross?
No.
No. Rothfuss?
No.
No. Scott?
No.
No. Von Fladern?
Aye.
Aye. Wasserberger?
Aye.
Aye. President Nicholas?
Aye.
Aye. Closing vote? Closing vote closed. 22 aye, 8 no.
Senate File 78, having received two-thirds majority vote, is referred to Committee Number 9, Minerals. Senate File 79, first reading of the bill.
Senate File 79, Big Game Animals Combination Licenses, sponsored by Senator Barnard.
Senator Barnard.
Mr. President, I move Senate File 79 for introduction. At this time, I would refer to Senator Hicks to explain the bill.
Senator Hicks.
Mr. President, members of the body, what this just does, it's a permissive for the department to go ahead and issue combination big game licenses. It's a way to assist in marketing some of these licenses. So as a non-resident and you're driving from Pennsylvania, you could apply for an elk and a deer and actually draw those at the same time, or a deer and an antelope. Under our current process, you have to apply for each one of those individually. So there's no guarantee you're going to draw one but the other. So only thing this does is allow the department some flexibility if they should so desire to issue combination permits. There's a slight increase in the fees for those because, quite frankly, it's worth it. To an individual that's driving from Pennsylvania, if you knew that you were coming out here for one trip to hunt two species, there's a significant savings to those individuals. Versus having to come out 2 years in a row to hunt. 1 year you hunt antelope, 1 year you hunt deer. It's permissive. If the department decides that it doesn't want to move forward with this, they don't have to. But it just gives them another tool in their toolbox to be able to market some of these permits. Likewise, with residents, there's some small fee increases, quite frankly, because it's worth it to have that dual permit in your pocket that if you're hunting one of those areas that's hard to draw, or highly desirable, and you can actually draw a deer and elk at the same time, that's a great opportunity to be able to hunt both versus just hunt one at a time. So all it does is provide some flexibility if the department wants to move in that direction. The assumptions based that they put in here that it could potentially increase revenues for about $424,000 a year if they issued up to, and it sets a limit of a maximum of 10%. Of either the resident or non-resident permits could go into these combination permits. With that, I'd ask for your favorable consideration.
Roll call.
Anderson?
Aye.
Aye. Barnard? I Bebout.
Aye.
I Boner.
Aye.
I Burns.
Aye.
I Case.
Aye.
I Christensen.
Aye.
I Coe.
Aye.
I Cooper.
Aye.
I Kraft.
No.
No. Dockstetter.
Aye.
I Driscoll.
Aye.
I Emmerich.
Aye.
I Escobel.
Aye.
I Geis.
Aye.
I Hastert.
Aye.
I Hicks. Hicks.
Aye.
I Johnson.
Aye.
I Kinski.
Aye.
I Landon.
Aye.
I Meyer.
Aye.
I Pappas.
Aye.
I Perkins.
Aye.
I Peterson.
Aye.
I Ross.
Aye.
I Rothfuss.
No.
No. Scott.
Aye.
I Von Platern.
Aye.
I Wasserberger.
Aye.
I President Nicholas.
Aye.
Aye. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 28 aye, 2 no.
Senate File 79, having received a two-thirds majority vote, is hereby referred to Committee Number 6. Travel. Senate File 80, first reading.
Senate File 80, Water Use Outside the State, sponsored by Senator Hicks.
Senator Hicks.
Mr. President, I would move for introduction Senate File 80, Water Use Outside the State of Wyoming. With this attempts to address my current...
Let me turn that on and off again. And it may be, it was on, but you might check your proximity to the mic.
Still not on, Mr. President.
It's on or off?
Off.
I apologize. My fault. I turned on. So, you're okay now. That was my fault. I apologize.
Mr. President, I'll just move for introduction of Senate File 80, Water Use Outside of the State of Wyoming. Currently in statutes, we have a prohibition, so anything over 1,000 acre foot of water to be used outside the state of Wyoming requires legislative authorization. There's good reason that that's in place. I won't go into the whole history of that, but it was primarily designed so that we're not shipping millions of cubic feet of water out to other places that have highly potable water out of the state of Wyoming. But we have another issue in the state of Wyoming, and this deals specifically with co-produced water through minerals or mine extraction. We literally inject tens of thousands of acre feet back into the ground every year. Some of this is fairly potable water. It has one constituent in there that can't be used. Under our current scenario, it's a significant expense to the mining and the oil and gas industries to inject this water, or they haul it off and they put it in a disposal pit and we treat it like garbage. As technologies are evolving, this water has some capacity to be able to treat it. What this would allow is those oil and gas companies and those mineral producers, if they go through a series of criteria. Number one, it has to be co-produced water, which means it has to be produced as part of a mineral extraction or a mining operation. Number two, that water would also have to go through some form of treatment to meet state water quality standards. And it also have to be a non-tributary water. Most of the tributary water, surface water, even groundwater is subject to some compact within the state of Wyoming. This is usually deep formation water. Non-tributary, you can equate it with fossil water. It's very deep. It's not hydrologically connected to the surface. Only thing this bill does is say, if you go through these processes, you will be able to market this water out of state. I will tell you the reason for this right now. If we don't incorporate this legislation, there's a significant barrier for any company that wants to go in and establish, because these water treatment facilities can run anywhere from $20 to $80 million, and they're not going to make a significant investment and do that. We have states and municipalities downstream of us in the Colorado that are very interested in this water if it should become available. But it would allow these companies to go out there and actually pursue the construction of these facilities and then enter into negotiations to market this water. With that, I'd ask for your favorable consideration of Senate File 80 for introduction.
Roll call. Anderson? Anderson?
Aye.
I, Barnard.
Aye.
I, Bebout.
Aye.
I, Boner.
Aye.
I, Burns.
Aye.
I, Case.
Aye.
I, Christensen.
Aye.
I, Coe.
Aye.
I, Cooper.
Aye.
I, Kraft.
Aye.
I, Dockstetter.
Aye.
I, Driscoll.
Aye.
I, Emmerich.
Aye.
I, Escabel.
Aye.
I, Geis.
Aye.
I, Hastert.
Aye.
I, Hicks.
Aye.
I, Johnson.
Aye.
I, Kinski.
Aye.
I, Landon.
Aye.
I, Meyer.
Aye.
I, Pappas.
Aye.
I, Perkins.
Aye.
I, Peterson.
Aye.
I, Ross. Ross.
Aye.
I, Rothfuss.
Aye.
I, Scott.
Aye.
I, Von Platern.
Aye.
I, Wasserberger.
Aye.
I, President Nicholas.
Aye.
Aye. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 30 aye.
Senate File 80, having received a two-thirds majority vote, is hereby referred to Committee Number 5, Ag. Senate File 81, first reading of the bill.
Senate File 81, School Capital Construction Charter School Leases, sponsored by Senator Rothfuss.
Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move for the introduction of Senate File 81, School Capital Construction Charter School Leases, and ask the body for favorable consideration. Mr. President, in the state of Wyoming right now, we have four charter schools throughout the state, two of which lease the buildings that they occupy to provide education for the students. For the circumstances where they lease the schools, there's an interesting phrasing within statute that has been interpreted such that if the lease exists between the charter school and the lessor, the school facilities department and the attorney general have interpreted that that's not eligible for lease reimbursement through the school facilities department in accordance with statute that basically says you'll reimburse. What has to happen is that the district, according to statute, would engage in that lease agreement, which is not how it actually happens in practice. Based on that interpretation, the school facilities department has not been budgeting for these lease payments under circumstances when the intent of the original statute was that that lease payment would be compensated for through the school facilities department. There are a series of conditions that are in place for what would allow that to take place, but the intent certainly was that the charter school would be reimbursed for those lease payments, assuming that those conditions were in place. This legislation simply changes that in such a manner that it clarifies that it can be the school district or the charter school approved by the school district that is entering into that agreement and would therefore be eligible under the previous circumstances and previous conditions that were in place. So this does not change the requirements or the conditions that were in place to receive that lease payment, or really in any way, shape, or form affect the behavior of a charter school. But what it does is try to clarify the original intent of that language, which would mean that the lease payment would be paid for out of the school facilities department's budget as a standard budget procedure. And then it further clarifies that you can see on page 3B that any payment made by the department pursuant to that paragraph for leased building shall not be exorbitant in cost. It shall be comparable to what would be otherwise paid for if it were a standard public school instead of a charter school. Now, I do want to point out that a charter school is a public school in the state of Wyoming. It's not a private school. So under any condition, this would always be a public school that at least would be provided for. Ask the body for favorable consideration.
Roll call.
Anderson. Aye. Barnard.
Aye.
Aye. Bebout.
Aye.
Aye. Boner.
Aye.
Aye. Burns.
Aye.
Aye. Case.
Aye.
Aye. Christensen. Aye. Coe.
Aye.
Aye. Cooper.
Aye.
Aye. Kraft.
Aye.
Aye. Dockstetter.
Aye.
Aye. Driscoll.
Aye.
Aye. Emmerich.
Aye.
Aye. Escabel.
Aye.
Geis.
Aye.
Aye. Hastert.
Aye.
Aye. Hicks.
Aye.
Aye. Johnson.
Aye.
Aye. Kinski.
Aye.
Aye. Landon.
Aye.
Aye. Meyer.
Aye.
Aye. Pappas. I. Perkins.
Aye.
I. Peterson.
Aye.
I. Ross.
Aye.
I. Rothfuss.
Aye.
I. Scott.
Aye.
I. Von Platern.
Aye.
I. Wasserberger.
Aye.
I. President Nicholas.
Aye.
Aye. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 30 aye.
Senate File 81, having received two-thirds majority of vote, is hereby referred to Committee Number 4, Education. Senate File 82.
Senate File 82, Palliative Care, sponsored by Senator Scott.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, I move introduction of Senate File 82. Mr. President, this is a bill trying to improve the palliative care that's given in this state. Had a fair number of questions about what palliative care is, and what it really is care for somebody that's terminally ill, might be terminally ill, or has a very serious chronic illness. It's care that's designed to reduce adverse symptoms, reduce pain and suffering, improve the quality of life, but it doesn't by itself seek to cure the illness or prevent death or prolong life. Hospice care is a subset of palliative care, but palliative care is broader than just hospice care. This is an opportunity, Mr. President, for us to do something that will help our citizens, that will help our citizens dealing with some of the toughest circumstances that any of us will ever encounter personally, possibly for ourselves, more likely for our parents or for a spouse or even, God forbid, a child, but some very tough circumstances. What it seeks to do is have a council that will explore some of the issues, look for initiatives that will help, seeks to have information posted to a website, which is something we can do very inexpensively. Seeks to, in this version, have some coordination and dialogue with the law enforcement people because some of the pain-relieving medications also are the ones that are often abused criminally when they get resold for illicit purposes. And I think if law enforcement and the palliative care people talk to each other better, they can come up with better solutions in that area. This is based, Mr. President, in good part on a national model that was developed by one of the major anti-cancer organizations in the country. It does have, particularly in trying to look at some of the issues with regard to the abuse of the medications and how law enforcement works, that's a little home cooking to it. I think it will be very useful, Mr. President, and it's something we can do without significant additional expense. You know, you're talking about a meeting room and the posting of a little to an existing department website. So it's something that is a feasible initiative at this time, and I would urge its introduction.
Roll call.
Anderson.
Aye.
Aye. Barnard.
Aye.
Aye. Bebout.
Aye.
Aye. Boner.
Aye.
Aye. Burns.
Aye.
Aye. Case.
Aye.
Christensen.
Aye.
Aye. Coe.
Aye.
Aye. Cooper.
Aye.
Aye. Kraft.
Aye.
Aye. Dockstetter.
Aye.
Aye. Driscoll.
Aye.
Aye. Emmerich.
Aye.
Aye. Escobel.
Aye.
Aye. Geis.
Aye.
Aye. Hastert.
Aye.
Aye. Hicks.
Aye.
Aye. Johnson.
Aye.
Aye. Kinski.
Aye.
Aye. Landon.
Aye.
Aye. Meyer. I. Pappas.
Aye.
I. Perkins.
Aye.
I. Peterson.
Aye.
I. Ross.
Aye.
I. Rothfuss.
Aye.
I. Scott.
Aye.
I. Von Platern.
Aye.
I. Wasserberger.
Aye.
I. President Nicholas.
Aye.
Aye. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 30 aye.
Senate File 82, having received a two-thirds majority vote, is referred to Committee Number 10, Labor. Thank you. Senate file number 12, Senator Meyer, Transportation Vietnam War Commemoration. First reading of the bill.
Senate file 12, Vietnam War Commemoration 2, sponsored by Transportation Committee.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move Senate file 12, Vietnam War Commemorations 2, for introduction. Ask for the body's favorable consideration. Mr. President, this sets up a Vietnam War commemorative account and establishes a matching account and authorizes the Veterans Commission to contract for services. And the services that we're contracting for, Mr. Chairman, well, let's start at the first there. The reason we have to set up accounts because you have to have some place to put matching funds. This is a 50-50 match program, and so those accounts have to be set up. It's for the Vietnam War veterans. They recently had their 50th celebration from the, I think, the end of the war. And the purpose for the grants, the donations, is to celebrate and honor Wyoming Vietnam veterans. several other states have done this along the same lines. I think Utah had the same type of a thing on a 50-50 match. Essentially, there's about 16,000 Vietnam vets. What we want to do is have a commemorative book that's going to be used primarily for the Vietnam vets. It's going to have Wyoming Vietnam vets in it, and it's going to be used for them to communicate with their families to try to help them move through the process of healing from that war. It's I think it's something that other states have done. It's something we should do. This is a one-shot deal. It's not a continuing thing. And we had great support from the committee and the Vietnam vets that testified on it. And I would hope that we can do something for our veterans, especially these Vietnam folks. It's kind of back in our area. I don't know who of you have actually served during that time period, but when they came back, they weren't that welcome. It's not like our Desert Storm folks. And so this is just something that that I hope that we can do for them. Thank you, Mr. President.
Roll call.
Anderson?
Aye.
Aye. Barnard?
Aye.
Aye. Bebout?
No.
No. Boner?
Aye.
Aye. Burns?
No.
No. Case? Aye. Christensen?
Aye.
Aye. Coe?
No.
No. Cooper?
Aye.
Aye. Kraft?
Aye.
Aye. Dockstetter? Aye. Driscoll?
No.
No. Emmerich?
No.
No. Escobel?
Aye.
Aye. Geis?
No.
No. Hastert?
Aye.
Aye. Hicks?
Aye.
Aye. Johnson?
Aye.
Aye. Kinski?
Aye.
Aye. Landon?
No.
No. Meyer?
Aye.
Aye. Pappas?
Aye.
Aye. Perkins?
No.
No. Peterson?
Aye.
Aye. Ross?
No.
No. Rothfuss?
Aye.
Aye. Scott?
Aye.
Aye. Von Platern?
Aye.
Aye. Wasserberger?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. President Nicholas?
No.
No. Closing vote? Landon? No to aye. Closing vote? Closing vote closed. 21 aye, 9 no.
Senate file 12, having received two-thirds majority of the vote, is hereby referred to Committee Number 8, Transportation. Senator Coe, first reading of Senate file 25.
Senate file 25, Hathaway Scholarship Program Award Increase, sponsored by the Education Committee.
Senator Coe.
Mr. President, I move for introduction of Senate File 25, deferred to Senator Landon.
Senator Landon.
Thank you, Mr. President. This bill, fellow senators, comes to you from your Joint Education Committee, and for those who have been around for a while, this is a longtime friend. There's a good reason why it comes up every 2 or 3 years, however, because that's the way the program was essentially set up. And when the Joint Committee talked about it, there were some real compelling reasons for us to suggest a visit of the full Senate. The Senate is primarily responsible for the creation of the Hathaway Fund, folks. And back when it was first established, I would simply point out that just on the honors level alone, the scholarships that we provided to some of our best students out there amounted to about those scholarship awards covered 91% of the percentage of tuition at the University of Wyoming. Today, those same scholarships cover 68%. We're not necessarily saying that's a bad thing, but we think it's a policy discussion that the Senate really needs to have as we try to keep our best and brightest in the state of Wyoming. It is the suggestion of your joint committee that we at least consider again this year an increase in those scholarship amounts. But I would ask for your favorable consideration. I think it's a good conversation. We have a lot of information that we can give as to the fund itself, which is actuarially sound. We've actually put more into that account than we've provided out in scholarships. So I encourage your positive support. Thank you.
Roll call.
Anderson.
Aye.
Aye. Barnard.
Aye.
Aye. Bebout.
Aye.
Aye. Boner.
Aye.
Aye. Burns.
Aye.
Aye. Case.
No.
No. Christensen.
Aye.
Aye. Coe.
Aye.
Aye. Cooper.
Aye.
Aye. Kraft.
Aye.
Aye. Dockstetter.
Aye.
Aye. Driscoll.
Aye.
Aye. Emmerich.
Aye.
Aye. Escobel.
Aye.
Aye. Geis.
No.
No. Hastert.
Aye.
Aye. Hicks.
No.
No. Johnson.
Aye.
Aye. Kinski.
Aye.
Aye. Landon.
Aye.
Aye. Meyer.
No.
No. Pappas.
Aye.
Aye. Perkins.
No.
No. Peterson.
Aye.
Aye. Ross.
Aye.
Aye. Rothfuss.
Aye.
Aye. Scott.
Aye.
Aye. Von Platern.
Aye.
Aye. Wasserberger. Aye. President Nicholas.
No.
No.
Bebout.
Aye to no. Driscoll. Aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 22 aye, 8 no.
Senate File 25, having received a two-thirds vote, majority vote is referred to committee number. Two appropriations. My little friend Rosiglione. Although he could say that's a nice little bill you got here. Reports from standing committees. Oh, are those? Those are general file.
No.
Oh. Yeah, thanks.
February 11th, 2016. Mr. President, your committee number 7, Corporations, to whom was referred Senate Joint Resolution 1, Right of Privacy and Right to Know, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Case, Hicks, Meyer, Pappas, and Scott. Senator Case, Chairman. February 11, 2016, Mr. President, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred Senate File 59, Deferred Compensation Automatic Enrollment Amendments 2, respectfully reports back to the Senate with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Burns, Hastert, Perkins, and Ross. excused Senator Wasserberger. Senator Ross, Chairman. February 11, 2016, Mr. President, your Committee Number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred Senate File 26, Lapsing of Appropriated Funds Amendments, respectfully reports back to the Senate with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Burns, Hastert, Perkins, and Ross, excused Senator Wasserberger. Senator Ross, Chairman. February 11, 2016, Mr. President, your Committee Number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred Senate File 11, Youth Challenge Program, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Burns, Hastert, Perkins, Ross, and Wasserberger. Senator Ross, Chairman. February 10, 2016, Mr. President, your Committee Number 8, Transportation, to whom was referred Senate File 9, Railroad Quiet Zones, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Boner, Emmerich, Esquivel, Johnson, and Meyer. Senator Meyer, Chairman.
Bills on second reading. Senator Meyer.
Senate File 9 has an appropriation. I ask that it be re-referred to appropriations.
That was 9?
9, yeah.
Without objection, Senate File 9 is re-referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations. And it is, the cast title is Railroad Quiet Zones. Bills on second reading. Senate File 7, second reading of the bill.
Senate File 7, Landfill Remediation Priority List.
I don't see any amendments, no discussion. Senate File 7, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, is so ordered. Senate File 8, second reading of the bill.
Senate File 8, Bicycle and Pedestrian System Task Force.
We do have an amendment. If the reading clerk would please read in the amendment. Here it is right here.
Senate File 8, second reading, amendment number 1.
Senator Cooper.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 8. Ask for your favorable consideration. Mr. President, after we had so much discussion and some great fun yesterday with this bill, thought we better make some amendments to take care of some of the concerns brought up on the Committee of the Whole. And so all these amendments are on page 5 of the bill. And the first one we did was on page 5, line 3. And as you can see there on line 3, we changed the wording on there, and we took out the word, particularly the word interstate there. The feeling was there was...
Senator Cooper, I hate to interrupt, but can you give me a show of hands of who has that amendment in their file? I just want to know, make sure everybody's got it. Okay, everybody's got it but us.
Oh.
You don't have to worry about us, so go forward. I apologize for the interruption. Go forward.
Thank you, Mr. President. Well, anyway, we'll start over again. There on page 5, line 3, we basically took out the several words there, but the key one was taking out the word interstate there. What we were mainly concerned here with was really with the local and the state for consideration for recommendations to those, and also the coordination with the local and state government, not necessarily being involved with the interstate government. Somehow that got worked into there, and I know there's some concerns. So we just flat took that out of there and limited it to just local and state concerns. And then on also, moving on down on page 5 again, line 12, as you can see there, there was some concern about
on line 12 about the word established roads. And I could see where that could be a concern, because you could establish roads could be private roads, and we certainly don't want to get into private property rights and private roads. We just meant, so we changed that to public roads, just meaning just what it means. Page 5, also moving down to line 15, what we did there, we just put a period after on line 15 after the word trails, because the feeling was there is we really, you know, all the federal agencies like the BLM and those federal agencies, Mr. President, have their own resource management plans and so forth, and they actually take care of this already. So we really don't need to include them in this task force consideration. So we took that out of there, and that's what that does. And then, of course, line 16 just simply eliminates the rest of that line. Mr. President, that is the gist of this amendment. Appreciate your consideration.
Discussion on the amendment. We're on second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 8. There being no discussion, the question is on second reading amendment 1 to Senate File 8. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That amendment has been adopted. There are no more amendments. Any further discussion on the bill? There being none, Senate File 8, having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Senate File 14, second reading of the bill.
Senate File 14, Student Data Privacy and Transparency.
I don't see any amendments. Any further discussion? There being none, Senate File 14, having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Senate File 20, second reading of the bill.
Senate File 20, Sales and Use Tax Remedy Revisions.
We have an amendment. Would you please read in the amendment?
Senate File 20, second reading, amendment 1, page 1, line 9.
Senator Case.
Mr. President, I would move second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 20. Mr. President, what this amendment does is address the concern I expressed yesterday that there didn't seem to be an affirmative obligation for a vendor to try to do the best they can to return the sales tax back to the purchaser, the customer, the taxpayer. And so I asked the department for some assistance in crafting some language. This is what is proposed by one of the staff members, kind of high up in the department. And, Mr. President, I think it's a pretty good solution. It says, after making reasonable attempts to identify and refund the excess tax to the taxpayer that originally paid the tax. Obviously, Mr. President, reasonable efforts is kind of a vagueness deliberate, but will be kind of perhaps refined in the rules of the department. We're not asking everyone that pays cash and is overcharged a couple of pennies for a vendor to go through that. This is really for your bigger situations where it's reasonable to do so. I ask for your favorable consideration.
Further discussion on the amendment. Senator Perkins.
Question for the sponsor of the amendment. I mean, I guess when I look at that, I mean, I'm just out of curiosity, I mean, it doesn't belong to the state if its tax should be refunded. It doesn't belong to the vendor. It belongs to the person. If it doesn't, is there any thought about why this wouldn't go to unclaimed property, which is where the rest of it is? I mean, I found out just this year that I had that there was money in unclaimed property for me, and I went through all this process to give it to me, and it was, Mr. President, there was a utility company in my town that hadn't refunded like $2.30, and I'd been living in the same place for 15 years, but they couldn't find me. But anyway, at some point, that is, you know, is that that's the right to go back to the department, or ultimately should be going back to the unclaimed property division so eventually it can be reclaimed by somebody, although I guess we don't know who the identity is. So,
Senator Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. President. We had fairly extensive debate on this in committee, and I think this amendment potentially can place a really a big burden on vendors. When you got to go back and search through looking for the thing, and reasonables really is, it's a very thin, undefined term, and I think you're taking a really a big chance if you pass this amendment of having a deal where you're placing a unbelievable burden on somebody. They found out that they inadvertently collected a tax that wasn't actually supposed to be collected, and now they have to go back and individually identify each one of these and do it back. And reasonable is interesting. To one person, a dollar is reasonable, and to another person, it's 10, to another, it's 500. And to me, I'm totally uncomfortable unless it has either a tag dollar amount or we kill the amendment. Thank you.
Further discussion, Senator Scott.
Mr. President, on for the amendment, for the same reasons that the gentleman just cited, the reasonable, I think, is the key word here. That's what keeps it from becoming an excessive thing. And basically, what we're talking about, if you're going to be talking a retail situation where they collected from a bunch of retail customers and they shouldn't have, one way or another, it ought to go to the state rather than the outfit that made the collection getting an extra profit boost off it. But you aren't going to be reasonably able to find those customers. You just aren't. But on a large ticket item where you do need to know where the customer is, then this will come into play and it's the right way to do it. I would urge adoption of the amendment.
Senator Perkins, for your second time.
For my second time, and so that if the sponsor doesn't know, somebody else on the committee that would heard this debate, just the other question I'd have for you is, only when the enforcement of this, I'm assuming, would be by the retail sales tax auditors. If it's obviously it's a cash sale, you're never going to know. I mean, and you look at these reports, they're aggregated amounts. So the question I have is, one, is the enforcement going to be through the sales tax audit process? Is that how this will be enforced? That's question one. And question two is, if the money goes back to the department, is that a cheat, or does it otherwise become property of the state and go to the general fund, or what happens with that once it goes back to the department?
Any further discussion? For the second and final time, Senator Case.
Mr. President, thank you very much. With regard to the good senator who's an accountant and a very skilled financial analyst from, as well as being an attorney from Natrona County, existing law says where the excess taxes are already collected. The reason this bill came about was because there was a tax ruling that sort of said that if you can't identify who it goes to, you can keep it. And so that was a kind of in conflict with existing law. This fixes existing law to what we think it said, and you can see that in the amendment. You can see the state of the law. It's not actually in the bill, but it says if any vendor collects a tax in excess of that imposed by the article, it shall be remitted to the department after making reasonable – or to the department, period, I'm sorry, or semicolon. That's the state of the existing law. And so it doesn't have anything to do with unclaimed property. We could argue if that would be a better way to have excess taxes go, and then there would be maybe a notice and somebody could come and try to find it. But that definitely isn't what is trying to be accomplished by the sponsor of this bill. They're just trying to prevent it from the vendor from just keeping it. And so they're trying to conform it with existing law. I would suggest that your proposal is maybe another bill, another discussion. With regard to the other good comments about whether reasonable is right or wrong, I obviously go with the tall senator from Natrona County and ask for your favorable consideration.
The question is on second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 20. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No.
No.
That amendment has passed. Any further discussion on the bill? Senate File 20, having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, is so ordered. the good senator from Casper having come into a small fortune drinks her on him. Senate File 21, second reading of the bill.
Senate File 21, Mineral Tax Archaic Provisions.
Senate File 21, I don't see any amendments. Are there any further discussions? Senator Peters, excuse me, it's Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. President. There was a question asked yesterday. I thought we got with the department, and they reminded us that, of course, this language on page 4 that's being proposed to be deleted was a tax rate reduction in 99 because of the price of oil at that time when the prices were extremely low, and so that's why it's being deleted. And the formula is 2 cents. Nothing's changed on that, and so the formula is it was just a time frame of about a year, I believe. And so this is old archaic language, and that's why it's being deleted. But the formula is still intact for stripper wells and other producers at 2 cents and 2 cents. So.
Further discussion. Senate File 21, having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a 3rd time? Hearing no objection, is so ordered. Senate File 23, second reading of the bill.
Senate File 23, NRC Agreement, State Amendments.
There are no amendments. Are there any further discussions? Senate File 23, having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a 3rd time? Hearing no objection, so ordered. Senate File 28, second reading of the bill.
Senate File 28, Carbon Capture, Storage, and Sequestration Permit.
There is an amendment. Would the reading clerk please read in the amendment?
Senate File 28, second reading amendment 1, page 2, line 19.
Senator Von Flatern.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 28. What this does, and the reason for this amendment, was to look at the process and make sure the process was defined as to how they would determine whether it was a Class 2, Class 6, carbon storage, or carbon sequestration. So you go to page 2, line 19. We delete the basis determination on. This is the director of DEQ asking the supervisor his opinion on it via a hearing. And so the director of DEQ is to consider what he, the supervisor of the Oil and Gas Commission, comes up with. Page 2, line 21, this is where we talk about after commission insert, the supervisor shall make his determination following a hearing. So they'll follow their rules and regs when they have the hearing on whether it's Class 2 or they think it's changed its process. Page 2, line 22, you delete that first standing committee amendment, which we inserted operator, and you put the director and all the persons with a property interest in the property where the permit is issued. So in other words, we're saying not only does he give notice to the operator, he gives notice to anybody that has a property interest in the property where it is the permit is issued. Page 2, line 23, after the and, insert shall provide the operator. And then once again, all persons with a property interest in the property where the permit is issued and all persons with a property interest impacted by the permit with a notice and the chance, and page 3, line 4, and page 3, line 5, this is where they can ask for a hearing. Not only can the operator, but if the property interest owner has an issue with the determination that has been directed or the director of the Department of Environmental Quality has come up with, whether it's Class 2 or Class 6, whether it's carbon storage, or whether it will contaminate their well. This is where both parties can then ask for a hearing in front of the Oil and Gas Commission. So that is the amendment. I'd be glad to answer questions on it and ask for the question.
Discussion on the amendment, Senator Bebout.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. President. Just a question on the property interest. Is there a definition In the definition section, is that property interest including, like, the working interest? Is it the NRI net royalty interest? Or is it the fee surface interest, possibly, or federal surface interest?
Senator Senator Perkins.
Just following up on that, and Mr. President, thank you. Before you talk your second time, just elaborate on that. And I want to make sure two things on this amendment. First of all, when we talked about this, and I think you've reserved it, but if it was long-term storage, that was always supposed to be under the DEQ. And if it was carbon capture, if it was for oil, enhanced oil recovery, then it was to be under commission. So now, with this hearing that happens, where does that start? I mean, ultimately, if the commission is going to, I need to help me understand how that works, that hearing, and where in the process that occurs, and because that's going to create either it's going to stay in the commission or it's going to go back to DEQ, I'm assuming. So that's one. And then the other one is on the legal property interest. And we talk about this, and we did the pore space. And if you remember, we created this pore space, and it becomes its own property right. And so when we talk about property rights, and you talk about carbon, there's this carbon, I mean, how do you don't know exactly where that carbon goes. It doesn't know where property lines are. It doesn't know where fence lines are. It doesn't know where county lines are. So how does that all fold into this issue about informing property interests, following up on the good senator from Fremont's question, there's surface interests, there's pore space interests, there's net property interests, there's royalty interests, there's all kinds of interests over the place. So if you help us understand what that's aimed at, I appreciate it. Thank you.
Any further discussion before the sponsor takes his second time? Senator Cooper.
Yeah, Mr. President, my question kind of leads basically the same way with the word impacted, because that could cover a lot of areas. So it's kind of like, I'd kind of like to know where that is too, like the previous question.
Senator Von Flader, for your second time.
For my second time, Mr. President, thank you. Definition of property interest. As brought to us, we were trying to exclude these non-government agencies, these NGOs, from showing up and throwing a wrench in there just to protest the idea of it being carbon at all. So property interest is presented to us. Had anybody that had a interest in the water rights and the actual property itself, whether it was subsurface or surface. So that's why we use the word property interest. How would the process start? It would either be somebody inquiring, somebody claiming, and or an operator saying, I need to move, I believe it is this, or it would be ONG themselves or the Department of Environmental Quality. It would be one of these groups saying something's changed here, and anybody could bring that complaint or that inquiry, which would start this process. The property lines, this is once again while we went with property interests, because you could be downstream from this field and your plume of your underground water could be affected by what they're doing up there, and you would have property rights only because you had the water rights downstream from this property. The impacted, and that goes to the answer to the question on impacted. When we talk about impacted, if you're in the city of Cheyenne or something and the oil well is west town, but that plume will eventually affect your water rights, your water wells, however you're drawing your water for the city, you are considered a property interest and impacted. So that's why we use the word property interest as much as we could in this, and to delete others. And with that explanation, Mr. President, I will sit down.
Further discussion. The question is on second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 28. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That amendment has been adopted. We're back on the bill. Any further discussion on the bill? There being none, Senate File 28 having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Senate File 30, second reading of the bill.
I think you're right.
Senate File 30, initiative review process.
Senate File 30, any discussion? I see no amendments. There being none, Senate File 30 having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, is so ordered. Senate File 33, second reading of the bill.
Senate File 33, vehicle registration, shell businesses.
We have an amendment. If we have two amendments, if the reading clerk would please read in the first amendment.
Senate File 33, second reading amendment 1, corrected copy, page 2, line 13.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move second reading amendment number 1, corrected copy, to Senate File 33 and ask for the body's favorable consideration. Mr. President, we had quite a little bit of discussion about how do we tighten this bill up, go right to the meat of it in these shell corporations as far as trying to determine whether or not for the purposes of whether they avoided taxes or not, that were due and payable in Wyoming on vehicles or other things that they bought outside the state where they didn't pay use taxes or sales taxes or license fees or titling fees. So we went right to the heart of it, Mr. President, on page 2, line 13, and we essentially said the primary business activity or purpose of the legal entity is the avoidance of paying Wyoming taxes and fees. The other language on page 2, line 14 was deleted. We go over to page 3. That has to deal with filing income tax at the direction of LSO, we inserted for paying income taxes. And so it's file or pay the income taxes. Then we had a new subsection E, and this was at the direction of the one of the good attorneys from the center of the state, who happens also to be an accountant, and I think that's why we came up with this language that says the business entity has not deducted vehicle depreciation or expenses in a federal income tax return. And so, in part, through the investigation, if it comes up that these folks had a business in another state and they should have been filing taxes, then it's also a matter of the IRS. And that's another way to find out some information and another way to perhaps force the our compelling interest, which is the payment of fees, taxes, and so, Mr. President, with explanation of that, I would stand for questions and ask for the body's favorable consideration.
Discussion on the amendment. There being none, the question is on second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 33. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That amendment has been adopted. Second reading amendment number 2, would the reading clerk please read in the amendment?
Senate File 33, second reading amendment number 2, page 2, line 17.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move second reading amendment number 2 to Senate File 33, ask for the body's favorable consideration. This goes into the consideration of jurisdiction or residency. When I was doing my research, I looked back into several of the residency requirements throughout the statutes and throughout different areas of our statutes, and that it should be for at least 1 year. And so I added that to be kind of uniform with the other statutes that we've had, and then went on to say that under no circumstances shall a registered agent be deemed to provide the legal entity with a physical location. And that simply is getting rid of the ability of somebody to essentially have a post office or an address at a registered agent and call that their physical location for purposes of avoiding taxes or fees. And so I'd ask for the body's favorable consideration on this.
Further discussion on amendment number 2. There being none, the question is on second reading number 2 to Senate File 33. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That amendment has been adopted. We're back on the bill. Further discussion on the bill. The question is, having been read, Senate File 33 having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, so ordered. Senate File 36, second reading of the bill.
Senate File 36, LLC member and manager liability.
We have an amendment. If the reading clerk would please read in the amendment.
Senate File 36, second reading amendment number 1, page 1, line 7.
Mr. Vice President.
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Vice President. I move second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 36. Folks, what the Supreme Court did with respect to single-member LLCs, so this is, Wyoming was one of the first states to say that you can form a limited liability company on your own to operate a business, and that you can do it as a single member, and you can also be the corporate president. You can get the benefits of it, and you can get the protection of your assets for those corporate businesses. The issue begins, when do you commingle and how do you commingle assets? Or if you're engaged in fraud of creditors and trying to hide assets, when can you pierce the corporate veil of a single member entity? The court actually did 2 things. The first thing, it took a list of factors that were traditionally considered and considered in piercing the corporate veil, which was fraud, commingling assets. There are about 3 big categories. And it broke those categories out into smaller categories of a 9 items. I don't have them in front of me, but generally just 9 different items. And they're all things that would be relevant to the piercing of a corporation. Here's the problem that we have with the case and where practitioners have with the case and those people wanting to file their companies in Wyoming. If you have a list of 9 items that are considered as indicators that you have corporation set up for fraud, and one of those factors are that you're a single member. One of the factors are that you're only filing a single tax return under the disregarded interest exceptions for the tax code. Those are items that are intrinsic to the very nature of the relation or the single member entity. So they shouldn't be put on either side of the scales. So if there's 9 items to be considered and you say, well, 4 things on the scale warrant piercing and 3 things don't warrant and your scale starts to look like piercing, but if these 2 or 3 items are intrinsic to what we authorize to do, such as you are a single member entity or you don't only file 1 tax returns, they shouldn't be on either side of the scale. So what we've done is saying factors that are intrinsic to the character and the operation of the limited liability, including these certain things, those don't go on either side of the scale. So you don't say, well, there are 5 things here and 3 things. Now, as a practical matter,
what we expect the court to do is really look to see whether there was a fraud, whether there was some effort to hide your assets, not be responsible for your corporate obligations, and those things are not likely to change. Now, there are folks out there, there may be another amendment coming down to say, let's go back to the list of three areas, the nine. I frankly don't think it makes any difference. I think the courts understand what factors to look at and what to assess, but they have to weight things differently. And what weight you give to certain items is a judicial function. That's why we have judicial folks weighing those interests. But in this, we're saying do not put on either side of the list and just mount up these things that are very intrinsic to the character and the nature of the limited liability itself, company itself. Thank you. I urge your support of the amendment.
Thank you. Do you want to speak up? Senator Scott.
Mr. Vice President. In the discussion, this issue in committee of the whole, I urge that we be very careful to be within the title of this so we are not unreasonably changing the bill, because this area will be litigated. So we have to be careful. And looking at the title of the bill and the purpose of the bill, specifying acts which will not justify imposing liability on members and managers, it's well within the title. There's no problem there. And, Mr. Vice President, the first three items there, I understand and support. My question goes to item four, and frankly, I don't quite understand what we're getting at here, and we're beyond my legal depth, and I'm hoping to call the attention of the other real lawyers in the body to what are we really doing here, and make sure we aren't going a step too far with this. What's the practical effect of that language, and what does it really mean? We do have to be a little cautious in this, given the nature of our courts, and the probability that this will be litigated, and what are we doing with point four?
Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. President. A question of the sponsor, and as I understand, when you talked about the intrinsic character of this, it's not on the left or not on the right in terms of how you look at this, but I think it would be one of the things that would be absolutely on the side that says, if any of these things occur, and that's why you want to pierce it, you cannot. Yet you're telling me they should not be involved in either way. I'm a little confused. These things clearly are why you have an LLC, and maybe there's others, but in fact they should not be considered, or they should be considered and not utilized when you have someone try to pierce the veil.
Other questions? Senator Perkins.
Thank you. Before the sponsor takes his second turn. Mike.
Oh, excuse me. I lit up your chair.
I'm over here, Mr. President.
Mr. President, point of order, I just want to clarify. You did say a real attorney, was that correct?
Yeah, we need all the help we can get. So anyway, going back and going back to the question about the intrinsic character, I mean, the reason what it is it's kind of like saying I'm a corporation because I want limited liability. You can't go out and say I want limited liability. Well, if you're seeking limited liability, that's a factor against that would say you should be able to pierce the veil and get to the individual member, the individual shareholder. And so we're trying to do the exact same thing for a limited liability company. You're saying just because you're a limited liability company doesn't mean that you're intentionally, that should be a factor in piercing the corporate veil just because you've elected to be a limited liability company as opposed to some other entity that also provides this limited liability protection. And so as you come about this, choosing to be a corporation isn't a factor of whether or not you pierce the corporate veil or not. That's just what you elected to do. It's not a factor that it
the corporation shouldn't weigh against piercing the corporate veil. It's about how you use the tool. It's not about the tool itself. So I don't know if that's helpful, but that's the idea behind it, that it's simply not a factor one way or the other. If you're abusing the elements and the protections provided for a corporation or limited liability or any other type of thing, if you're abusing those, then you shouldn't have those advantages. But if they're not abusing those, then those things should stay in place and they ought to be rock solid. And that's what we're trying to do here, is put those things in place and say, this is rock solid. And so when you look at these factors, it's exactly about limit the liability of both the manager and the members, because we're saying these things cannot be considered in whether or not you're abusing the structure of the limited liability company. So if you're a single member, no court, that's not a factor in determining whether you should pierce the corporate veil, whether or not that member or the manager is entitled to limited liability protections provided by Wyoming law. Or that if you have number four, protection of wealth of acts from a limited liability company. That's exactly why we do it. We do it because we want to separate the operations of property management or the operations of our farm and ranch business or the operations of our plumbing business or the operations of our law. Well, law practice doesn't work because they get pierced us all the time. But any other type of business you have, you say, I'm going to put my operations here. But guess what? My retirement account's not there. My savings account's not there. My wife's car's not there. It's over here. So I'm protecting my wealth. That's the very reason that you make corporations. That's the very reason that you make limited liability companies, is so you can protect that wealth. And so we're saying, court, you cannot consider these factors, because this is why we're creating a limited liability company. They're intrinsic to the very purpose and nature of this. It's very similar to corporations, very similar to all those things. We're saying you don't get to take the very reasons why we created these things, which are legitimate and legal reasons as determined by the Wyoming legislature, and turn around and use them against the owners.
For amendment good. Amendment
good. Vote aye.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, I really appreciate that discussion. It does make it clear to me, and, you know, historically, one of the reasons that the corporate form was developed and has led to the flourishing of our free enterprise system was that ability to isolate the personal assets from the business activities, so that you stick strictly to the business activities for your remedies. And now point four makes a lot of sense to me. And it isn't, these things aren't absolute protections, because you still need, if somebody is really abusing things, I suppose creating a criminal act or something like that, and you do need to have some ability to pierce with the traditional things, and so these things just don't count in that argument. That makes a lot of sense, too. So I urge adoption of the amendment. I think it's a good improvement on this bill, and is, now that I understand it fully, quite consistent with what the bill that came in initially was trying to do.
Thanks, Senator Scott. Senator Case.
Mr. Vice President, thank you very much. I'm not quite so sure I'm there yet. I think this is perhaps a step in the right direction. But this 1729.304 is liability of members and managers. Part A that's not in your bill says, the debts, obligations, or other liabilities of a limited liability company, whether arising in contract, tort, or otherwise, (1) are solely the debts, obligations, or other liabilities of the company, and 2) do not become the debts, obligations, or other liabilities of a member or manager solely by reason of the member acting as a member or manager acting as a manager. Little B says, the failure to exercise, which is in your bill, the formalities and the powers is not a ground for imposing liability. What the bill was trying to do is to go into that area where it's not a ground and say, nor the fact that it's a limited liability, that you elect this pass-through tax treatment. Okay? And I see the good president's point, that it's kind of a litany of things that the court can weigh.
But I would suggest that as this kind of came out, it's a little bit sloppy, and it really doesn't fit within. It's sloppy but crafted very cleverly, Mr. President. and I didn't mean to refer to the good senator from Albany County by his title in this instance. But it doesn't quite fit with the structure of the rest of the section. I suspect we can do better and come to something in the middle. I'm going to resist the amendment and try to come back with something and discuss further with the members of the bar and come back with something else.
Mr. President.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Vice President. Folks, this language is being scrutinized by folks that do a lot of work in this area, and so we'll get ideas for our concerns. But generally, we take for granted that everybody understands how we arrive at the problem. I think everybody understands that the basic purpose of an LLC or a limited liability company is because we want to encourage people to take risks, to build businesses, to generate wealth, to generate jobs. And in order to create risk, we say we will create avenues for you to protect your wealth. So you can set up the LLC, you can fund the LLC, you can say these are my assets I'm putting up, and these are the assets I'm exposing to the risk. Now, there are other rules, and you can protect all other assets. Now, there are other rules. You can't commingle your personal assets with this. You can't treat these accounts like your personal. You can't pay your personal checks out of the entity. And there are all kinds of protections to make sure the creditors are not cheated by folks with bad motivation. But part of the problem is that the LLC law captures from existing law for corporations many principles, because this is a young statute. And in various areas, we reach out and we pull case law from regular corporations. From a regular general corporation, we say you have to have a president. You have to have a vice president. You have to have at least two shareholders. You have to have these attributes of ownership. And so when we look at piercing the corporate veil, what the courts did is they went and ran out and grabbed the case law that applies to general corporations and then applied them to LLC. What the court didn't do, though, is say, and then they say, here's a list of nine things. Well, there, if you were a regular corporation, if you were a single member, you would violate the statute. And yet we say over here, you can do this as long as you follow these rules. So what we're saying is that these factors, and we can work on the language to make sure we get it right, because this is an important statute. It's important to people who are investing, and it's important to those people that are doing businesses with these entities, so we have to balance. But we say that if your motivation is to preserve your wealth, that's not relevant. We understand this. That's exactly why you formed it. And if your motivation was to have a single entity so you didn't have to have a share your company with other people, that's okay, because we've authorized you to do those. And yet those things, if you put them into the context of a Fortune 500 or a large company, you might say, well, if that's what you're doing, that's not what we understood. Shareholders didn't understand it, because they look at the shareholders of the statutes, and those things are generally weighted toward piercing the corporate veil. But you can't pierce the, but when we're looking at weighting these issues, we look at the things that show fraud, misrepresentation, under-collateralization, the bad things. And the person that's piercing the corporation said, well, the reason you formed that corporation was to protect your assets. That's a bad thing. It's not. We've said we want you to do those things. So it doesn't go on either side of the scale to weight. We just eliminate those factors. You go and look at the factors of operating. Were you honest? Were you running this corporation for your business purposes? Was it adequately capitalized? Did you segregate your assets? If you made misrepresentations, then that looks like on the piercing side. If you were commingling and using it as your own personal account that goes on the commingling side, and those are the things that we weigh. But these simply don't go in the weighing factors on either side. Thank you.
Question on the amendment. All those in favor of second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 36, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Amendment has passed. Mr. President.
Second reading number 1 to Senate File 36 was adopted. We're back on the bill. Any questions on the bill? Any further discussion? Senate File 36, having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a 3rd time? Hearing no objection, is so ordered. Senate File 43, second reading of the bill.
Senate File 43, Workforce Investment Act, statutory reference amendments.
There are no amendments. Is there any discussion? There being none. Senate File 43, having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a 3rd time? Hearing no objection, is so ordered. Senate File 44, second reading of the bill.
Senate File 44, obsolete statutory language, health care.
There appears to be no amendments, no discussion. Senate File 44, having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a 3rd time? Hearing no objection, is so ordered. Senate File 47, second reading of the bill.
Senate File 47, juvenile sex offender risk assessment.
There appears to be no amendments. There's no discussion. Senate File 47, having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a 3rd time? Hearing no objection, is so ordered. Senate File 49.
Senate File 49, direct primary care insurance exemption.
Appears to be no amendments. No discussion. Senate File 49, having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a 3rd time? Hearing no objection, is so ordered. Senate File 56, second reading of the bill.
Senate File 56, dietitian reimbursement.
There appears to be no amendments. No discussion. Senate File 56, having been read 2 separate times, the second question is, shall the bill be read a 3rd time? Hearing no objection, is so ordered. Senate File 57, second reading of the bill.
Senate File 57, freestanding emergency center.
There appears to be no amendments. There's no discussion. Senate File 57, having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a 3rd time? Hearing no objection, is so ordered. Bills on 3rd reading, final passage. Senate File 35, 3rd reading of the bill.
Senate File 35, referendum circulator payment, sponsored by the Corporations Committee, an act relating to elections.
Is there any further discussion on Senate File 35? There being none, roll call.
Anderson?
Aye.
Aye. Barnard?
Aye.
Aye. Bebout?
No.
No. Boner?
Aye.
Aye. Burns?
Aye.
Case?
Aye.
Aye. Christensen?
No.
No. Coe?
No.
No. Cooper?
Aye.
Aye. Kraft?
Aye.
Aye. Dockstetter?
No.
No. Driscoll?
Aye.
Aye. Emmerich?
No.
No. Escobel?
Aye.
Aye. Geis?
No.
No. Hastert?
Aye.
Aye. Hicks?
Aye.
Aye. Johnson?
No.
Kinski?
No.
No. Landon?
No.
Meyer?
Aye.
Pappas?
Aye.
Aye. Perkins?
No.
No. Peterson?
No.
No. Ross?
No.
No. Rothfuss?
No.
No. Scott?
Aye.
Aye. Von Platern?
No.
No. Wasserberger? No. President Nicholas?
No.
No. Cooper, aye to no. Barnard, aye to no. Anderson, aye to no. Hastert, aye to no. Closing vote? Closing. Vote closed. 10 aye, 20 no.
Senate File 35, having failed to receive the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Senate, Senate File 35 has failed to pass the Senate. Senate File 42, third reading of the bill.
Senate File 42, Occupational Therapy Practice Act, sponsored by the Corporations Committee, an act relating to professions and occupations.
Senate File 42, are there any further questions? It appears you'd be ready for the question. Senate File 42, having been read three separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass? The Chief Clerk will please call the roll.
Anderson.
Yeah?
Aye. Barnard?
Aye.
Bebout?
Aye.
Aye. Boner?
Aye.
Burns?
Aye.
Case? Aye. Christensen?
Aye.
Coe?
Aye.
Cooper?
Aye.
Kraft?
Aye.
Dockstader?
Aye.
Driscoll?
Aye.
Emmerich?
Aye.
Escobel?
Aye.
Geis?
Aye.
Hastert?
Aye.
Hicks?
Aye.
Johnson?
Aye.
Kinski?
Aye.
Landon?
Aye.
Meyer?
Aye.
Pappas?
Aye.
Perkins?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Ross?
Aye.
Rothfuss?
Aye.
Scott?
Aye.
Von Platern?
Aye.
Wasserberger?
Aye.
President Nicholas?
Aye.
Aye. Closing vote? Closing. Vote closed. 30 aye.
Senate File 42 having received the affirmative.
Thank you. Senate File 42 having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Senate, Senate File 42 has passed the Senate. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, we have some messages. Hold up. Standing Committee reports.
February 11, 2016, Mr. President, your Committee Number 7, Corporations, to whom was referred Senate File 34, Uniform Fiduciary Access to Digital Assets Acts, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with the recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Case, Hicks, Meyer, Pappas, and Scott. Senator Case, Chairman. February 11, 2016, Mr. President, your Committee Number 7, Corporations, to whom was referred Senate File 38, Data Management Policies, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with the recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Case, Pappas, and Scott. No, Senators Hicks and Meyer. Senator Case, Chairman.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that clears the desk, and we're ready for general file, if that's where you want to go, or it's up to you, Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. President. Members of the Senate, I'd like to work with General Foss for a little bit, and so we can maybe get through early today, but more importantly, members of the Senate, is we're going to probably start early tomorrow, so we're not around here on a late Friday afternoon. With that, Mr. President, I move the Senate resolve itself in Committee of the Whole to discuss bills on general file.
Just one comment before we call for that motion. The budget bill, there were significant changes. They're working hard on it. We've told the staff to make sure that the bill is right. The intention was to start the bill on Monday. The bill has to be out for 24 hours before we can undertake work on the bill. It may be out. If it's not, then we will delay a day to make sure the bill is
accurately, properly drafted without killing our staff. So you will receive at least 24 hours of that bill. We would like to get it out Friday or tonight or tomorrow morning, but we anticipate that may not take place. If it doesn't, we will push back the entire schedules, make sure that everybody has time. Senator Case.
Mr. President, thank you. In discussing with the Mr. Majority Floor Leader, he had indicated his desire to have Senate Joint Resolution 1 re-referred to appropriations. That's the constitutional amendment resolution. And
go ahead and make that motion.
Yeah, I do make that motion. It doesn't have an appropriation, but it will entail an expense.
Okay, so Senate, without further objection, Senate Joint Resolution Number 1 is re-referred to appropriation. There's no appropriation in that bill, so the funding either has to be in the Secretary of State's office or in the bill. We just want to make sure that we know that there's funding to carry that bill through. So without further objection, that bill is re-referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations. Any further issues? If not, you've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye. Opposed, no. That motion has been adopted. Senator Landon. You know, it's a touch activated, but I find that the mouse is easier. So it's better work for me. That's usually what I do.
Committee of the Whole will come to order. First bill for our consideration, Senate File 37. Would the reading clerk please read the bill?
Senate File 37, Boards and Commissions Party Affiliation, sponsored by the Corporations Committee. It was referred to the Corporations Committee, who submitted a recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senator Case, Hicks, Meyer, Pappas, and Scott. Senator Case, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Case?
Mr. Chairman, thank you very much. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, that it do so with a do pass recommendation on Senate File 37, Boards and Commissions Party Affiliation. Mr. Chairman, I note that there is a standing committee amendment. I would ask that it be read in at this time.
Would the reading clerk please read in the amendment? Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 37.
Senate File 37, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 9, line 4.
Mr. Chairman, I would move the Standing Committee Amendment, and for an explanation of the bill and to handle the amendment, I would ask that the Chair call on Senator Hicks.
Senator Hicks.
Mr. Chairman, members of the body, this topic was assigned to the Joint Corporations Committee, and we worked this pretty diligently at least several meetings. A lot of interest in this particular bill. But we in the Senate, because we go through the boards and commissions confirmations on many of these things, understand some of the problems that arise with the current situation where you have political splits. In many places, that creates so much difficulty that it's hard to find people to serve on those boards and commissions. So what this legislation attempted to do was to provide some uniform and consistency for all boards and commissions, to remove those unnecessary political splits on those boards and commissions where it was deemed by the committee that there was really no political party or nonpartisan issues associated with the issues with that board of commission, and we'll get into that. What the committee tried to do was to come up with some directions on how to do political party splits in a fashion that maintain the integrity of the process, but not to establish some type of political
hegemony associated with political parties. So with that, members of the body, what I'd like to do is walk you through the bill. So when we talk about uniform and consistency across all boards and commissions, I'm just going to walk through each one of these and you'll see what this does. So what we've effectively done is just establish a percentage across the board. So it's going to say 75% where it used to say 3 members or 4 members or 1 members of each political party. So this will be consistent. So the first one we go into is the State Board of Parole on page 2. Struck the language where it said no more 4 and inserted 75% of the members shall not be from any same political party. The next one is the Geological Survey. This is one of those areas where we felt like as a committee and taking testimony that there was really no need for a political split on the Geological Survey Board. So we have eliminated that political split requirement for board appointment. Going to the Wyoming Retirement Board, inserted 75% instead of just a numerical value. Go over to the next one, the Community Development Authority, just established a 75% split between party affiliations. Next one's Wyoming Business Council, established a 75% split for membership on that board. And these are not to exceed 75%. So in many cases, you're going to end up with a scenario where you actually round down because of not exceed. Next one was the Aeronautics Commission. Here again, one of those, we didn't see the need to maintain some political split for the Aeronautics Commission, so we've eliminated that requirement for appointment to the Aeronautics Commission. Next one's Board of Agriculture. Maintained a political split there, 75%. Paramutual Commission. We felt that this was probably a nonpartisan issue, so we just eliminated that. Telecommunications for the hearing impaired. No political split associated with that. State Board of Education would go to 75%. Excuse me, as we go over to the next ones, the School Facilities Commission would go to 75%. Wyoming Higher Education Assistance Authority goes to 75%. Wyoming Board of Trustees at the University of Wyoming goes to 75%. Community College Commission is 75%. Game and Fish Commission maintains a political split with not to exceed 75%. Wyoming State Board of Outfitters and Guides, here again, we didn't feel like this was something that required a political split, so we've eliminated that. Department of Transportation goes to 75%. Unemployment Insurance Commission goes to 75%. And in some of these, there's 2 or 3 as examples. Well, we've changed it from 2 or 3. Basically, it doesn't change the makeup on the boards whatsoever. Public Utilities Commission would be another one example of that. Advisory boards for the DEQ, for the Air, Land, and Water Quality Divisions. We've got rid of the political splits. Actually, that's in the amendment. I'll address that later. In the current draft, it says 75. Industrial Siting Council maintains a political split. Wyoming Parks and Cultural Resources. Was the feeling of the committee to eliminate that. No, that's the other one in the amendment. I'll again address that. So a 75%. Public Service Commission goes to 75%. State Board of Equalization, 75%. Water Development Commission, 75%. The other thing, Section 2, so you know the effective date on this would go in July 1st, but in Section 2, nothing in this act would change current makeup of any board based on the political splits. Until those terms expire, they wouldn't be moved out. So it maintains the status quo for those people currently serving on those boards. With that, Mr. Chairman, I would like to address the amendment. So the amendment goes into those 3 that I touched on that we went through on page 9, line 4. Let's a little longer when you only have one good arm, so if you'll bear with me. This dealt with the telecommunications for the hearing impaired. Basically, the standing committee amendment would strike that language, and it would no longer have a political split associated with that. The next one was the DEQ. If you go to page 17, line 22 and 23, that's the Department of Air Quality, Water and Land Advisory Boards. We didn't feel that was necessarily needed a political split, so we've eliminated that in the amendment. And then the next one is page 18, which is the Wyoming Parks and Cultural Resources. The standing committee dispatched to the political split there. I wouldn't require that. With that, Mr. Chairman, I'd ask for your favorable consideration on standing commitment. Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 37.
It's easy for you to say, Senator. Any discussion on Standing Committee Amendment? Are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Case's motion to adopt the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 37, please say aye.
Aye.
The Standing Committee Amendment has passed. I apologize. Let's do that over again. All those in favor of the Standing Committee Amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? No. The Standing Committee Amendment has passed. We are back on the bill. A discussion on the bill. Are you ready for the question? Senator Raffas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I have a couple of questions and a little concern, I think, about this legislation. It was presented as a standardization, first of all, to try and get to the point where you had common language of 75%. I think one of the key points that was not raised along with that 75% common theme is the dramatic change in the representation that goes along with that shift to 75%. Most of the boards right now are comprised or are attempted to be comprised of as even of a party split as they can be to try and keep politics out of these boards, right? That's the intent, and that's the way they've long since been established. The idea is roughly equivalent, so you have one more than half or something along those lines. In an 11-member party, or excuse me, 11-member commission, you might have no more than six, for example, of one party. The idea there is to try and keep partisanship out of those boards and commissions, the ones that feel politically sensitive to the best of the ability. When you shift it to 75%, you change that dramatically to the point where the party does make a difference. One of them dominates the other. And we see from time to time in this very body and in the other chamber that you don't always get the best product when you don't have tension between ideas. It's a valuable part of the process to have nearly equal splits on issues that are of importance. And when you don't have that, when you have the ability of one majority to simply roll over another majority, or the minority, excuse me, then you don't get the best product, which is why these boards and commissions and that general approach has been in place for a long time. And I know that most people are thinking something along the lines of, well, most of these aren't very political, it doesn't matter very much, it's so hard to find Democrats for these positions. I'll address each of those independently, but the challenge I'd have you think about the fairness of this, there's a few. First of all, I'll point out the fact that there are no Democrats on this committee. The Corporations Committee does not have a Democrat, so it unanimously brought legislation to this body to eliminate the Democrats from commissions. Well, that's the type of consequence of having an overwhelming majority without representation of all interests presented when the discussion is taking place. So you can take that as a nice little case in point of the type of decision-making process that might occur. Beyond that, I would say, if you think it through and you feel very comfortable that party doesn't matter in these types of situations, then envision the opposite. Envision a circumstance where 75% of the board is not your party, but is in fact the other party. And just think, not whether you like that or not, because I'm going to guess you may not, many of the members in this chamber, although some may like it. But what I would say is, do you think it would make a difference? That's the only question. Do you think it would make a difference if you switched the party makeup of these boards and commissions so that it was a mirror image? So that a substantial majority that was capable easily of defeating the minority, your party, in the example, was always in power. Do you think you would get the same types of solutions, the same quality of solutions, and the same representation of your interests under that circumstance? And I'm going to guess from a fairness standpoint that you'd arrive at the same conclusion that I have, which is no, it does change things. So to assume it doesn't make a difference and to present that argument, it doesn't really make a difference, these aren't partisan boards, when you're thinking it through, what a nightmare it would be if you switched the party alignment, you can't have both of those. They can't both be true. So that's one concern I'd be interested in hearing addressed. But going back to the idea that it's difficult to find minority members on all of these boards is very different from stating we had some boards where it was difficult to find minority membership. State Board of Education, University of Wyoming Board of Trustees, Retirement Board. There are boards and commissions where there is no problem finding dozens of capable, willing, interested volunteers from the minority party. You can have a line outside the governor's door as long as we choose to make it of qualified individuals for some of these positions. Maybe not all of them. There certainly are challenges. And when you get into the subdivisions of we need a Democrat with the red hair from Niobrara County who's under 5 feet tall, that is a bit of a challenge. And we have circumstances like that. And I agree that there are circumstances that we've established where it becomes challenging to identify those roles. But to sweep all of the boards and commissions into the generalized statement that we cannot find minority membership that is capable of representing the interests of the state of Wyoming is a broad generalization that is not accurate and has not proved accurate because you can simply look to the boards. So one of the questions I would ask the sponsors is, did they interview the boards that they're changing and get recommendations from each of these boards indicating that they would prefer to restructure it? That would be one thing. Did they get testimony from all of them? And for each of these, have you demonstrated specifically that we've had problems and challenges identifying successful and viable candidates? Or are we generalizing to the ones that are difficult, those that have proven easy and efficient to find those minority representatives? And then honestly, I'd challenge the chamber, the general chamber, to look around the membership, some of our larger and more important boards, and how good of work they've been doing in recent years. State Board of Education, I think, has done an excellent job. The Wyoming Board of Trustees at the university, I think they've been doing spectacular in recent years, and we've selected some excellent trustees recently. And there are other examples where we've done fine work, and I think a substantial part of that is that they don't have to worry about the partisanship. That gets checked at the door because there's going to be a balance. So you have to win with a good idea, not just the prevailing party message, but a good idea that gets support from both sides. That's the nature of the existing statute. It supports cooperation, compromise, and collegiality. If we turn this into a partisan system, we won't get the same robust level of scrutiny. It won't be focused on the material, but can become political. And I challenge the body also. We're empowered to pass this. The majority of this chamber is empowered to pass this. But I would remind the body that it will be passing it over the interests of the minority party, which, again, is indicative of the very reason why we would want to avoid that type of circumstance in our boards and commissions, which are supposed to be specifically working on the tasks at hand and not playing politics. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator. Let's go with Senator Hicks first, and then I'll go to Senator Nicholas. Senator Hicks.
Mr. Chairman, members of the body, I'm not going to try to address every one of those points, but I want to try to address the first three points. And the broad brush category is were laid out. And the first one was is that what happens and if we reverse that scenario? And in fact, the history of Wyoming suggests We facilitated that opportunity to happen. The minute that you get rid of all political affiliations on those boards means that every one of these boards and commissions is appointed by governors. And we have a history in this state of electing Democratic governors. So the very fact that, for some reason, this is going to eliminate the ability for the other party to be able to come back and do this is absolutely wrong. When you get rid of that political split completely, doesn't exist anymore. It will be up to the discretion of the governor. And the fact that we've had two out of the last four governors as Democrats, and we will probably have Democratic governors in the future, I think defeats the argument that this will always have hegemony of one political party on these particular boards that we've eliminated party split. The intent of this is to get the best people we can on these boards and commissions, regardless of what party the governor belongs to. So I think that argument doesn't bear fruit from a standpoint that it will always be one-party domination. The second point I'd like to bring out is there was a discussion that says all we're trying to do is establish that majorities to run all the minorities. But I would point out that already exists. It already exists. Every one of these that we've addressed already has the propensity to have a dominance by one political party. So it's the ratio may have changed. The issue hasn't changed one iota. And to the third point, that maintaining this party split somehow defeats the ability to have a articulate debate amongst parties. The argument that was presented was that it's all about numbers on the party, not the quality of the party members. In other words, for some reason, you have to have three of one party to be able to argue a cogent argument and represent that view instead of two. It's not a numbers game, I would contend. It's a quality game. So I reject the notion that just because you have two people of one party, some reason they can't express their views and present their point of view on these issues as well as three people. It's not a numbers game. So, Mr. Chairman, those are just three of the issues that I think that were the broad brush things that were thrown out there. But I think there may have been some miserronious presentation as to how this would actually operate. With that, Mr. Chairman, I would sit down and answer any questions.
Thank you. Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I voted against this bill on an introduction, and I'm speaking on and against this bill. Folks, we have a problem. We know what the problem is. We have divided up many of the areas for which these appointments come by geography. The geography goes back to county lines, goes back to judicial districts. It goes back to a variety of different areas, different reasons for geography. The geography was not made of these lines is not consistent with the one man, one vote rule that we believe in when you look at your Senate districts. So what we're finding is that in certain areas, particularly small geography areas, that folks living in that area, the population, the demographics of that small geography area simply don't provide a sufficient number of cross-section of folks representing both parties to get a minority candidate. And we know practically that the minority party in this state is largely found in urban areas. And since the urban areas are weighted more heavily in the urban areas have changed since we set up our counties, since we set up our judicial districts. And I'm also, so as a practical matter, when you begin and throw a number like 75%, if you were to put a percentage there, if you're going to change and not say it's half, maybe half wasn't right, but it ought to be look at the statewide representation of the minority party. And it's not, but the issue always becomes that the governor has a favored person he wants to appoint in a one county and he chooses, for example, a Republican in Laramie County where there's plenty of qualified Democrats, but then he leaves himself forced to appoint a Democrat in a county where there's only 8 Democrats in the entire county, it's a problem. He doesn't have enough folks for choice. But I'm also troubled. I mean, there are a lot of reasons that account for the supermajority that exists in this body right now. And I'd submit to you one of the largest reasons is because of national politics and our disdain for some of the current administration's issues, and that's sort of shared throughout Wyoming, and here we are. In my term, it's not always been that. In my 20 years, we've had times of greater representation by Democrats, and it's changed. But because of that, we've had to create committees that do not have minority party representation. And like it or not, this committee had no minority representation. This bill had no minority input before it arrives today. And we owe it to the entire state and to the political system to make sure this is done right. The analysis that needs to be performed in trying to figure out what the solution to the problem is just as likely to be a geographical adjustment than it is an adjustment of the party affiliation. In other words, we could move we could change the geographical areas so they represent the areas where you would have a better reflection of one man, one vote. Some of these boards give a stronger representation to areas that are rural and less to people that are urban. Now, if you're in the rural area, you might say that's kind of the way we want it. But the fundamentals of our state and the fundamentals of how we treat people fairly throughout the state is one man, one vote. And unfortunately, this bill is a product of the biases that occur when only one party is represented on the committee that spawned the bill, that brought the bill to you. And I see no effort to say, wait a minute, maybe the problem is the geographic borders. It's not whether or not there's an adequate number of qualified minority candidates to fill these seats. Now, should the minority party, if there's only 30% in the state, or only 40%, should they get automatically one half of the seats? No, I'm not suggesting they do, but I think that that's fair discussion and fair debate. But this is a bill that should go back to work with minority representation, and the issue of the geographical borders should be on the table as part of the discussion to solve the problem that we all know exists. Thank you.
Senator Case, and then we'll come back to Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, this bill is sponsored by the Joint Interim Elections and Political Subdivisions Interim Committee. It does have a Democratic member who participated fully in the committee. And I think that's just, you know, we don't have a member of the minority party in the Senate. My understanding is that that's because the minority party chose the, and correct me if I'm wrong, I don't mean to be disingenuous, but if I understand there's a limited number of seats and you chose the ones you thought were important to you, and we did have minority members when we did redistricting. But the Joint Committee did, and this is a product of the Joint Committee. We did consider geographic boundaries. We looked at a possibility of using the judicial districts. But as folks probably know, they're not really representative of one man, one vote as well. We looked at the other entities that use districts. So we came up with this solution. Now, take two things, okay? Tell me why, give me a really good reason why some of these boards shouldn't be nonpartisan at all. For example, the work of the committee in the bill said that the Geological Survey Board should not have a party affiliation as a criteria for being a member. I think that sounds pretty good to me. That's what the bill says. The bill says that the Wyoming Aeronautics Commission should not necessarily reflect a party split, that it's that it doesn't need one, and that it could be all members of the minority party, all members of the majority party, or maybe all independents. Wouldn't make any difference. We think they do a good job. This is an endorsement of the people of Wyoming and doing a fair job. The Wildlife and Natural Resource Trust Board, also made completely nonpartisan in this bill. The Paramutual Commission, made nonpartisan. The committee added in its amendment the Telecommunications Advisory Board for the Hearing Impaired, made totally nonpartisan. Doesn't matter if the good governor appoints all independents, libertarians, communists. Doesn't matter, because we know they're going to do the right thing. We also, the committee, took and extended the thinking about nonpartisanship to the Board of Nursing Home Administrators. Couldn't figure out why there needed to be a party split for the Board of Nursing Home Administrators. And that's in your bill. The amendment covers the issue of there are three advisory boards to the Environmental Quality Commission. It's an advisory board with respect to air quality, one with respect to land quality, and one with respect to water quality. Couldn't understand why it made sense to have any kind of a split required. Could be all Martians for all we care, as long as they do a good job for the people of Wyoming and they're selected by the governor. So if you do you agree with that concept or not for those boards? Because that could be separated out entirely. You could leave the rest of the boards with the split that's in the law. You could tweak it to be 50-50, for frankly. But if you agree with the concept of these boards becoming totally nonpartisan, then we could do that with this bill. It's right here in front of you on the table. And you could bring an amendment for the rest of the boards that have partisan splits to remove them from the bill so that they remain exactly as they are. And I suspect that would be a step in the right direction and perhaps a step we agree on. Maybe not. I'm reaching on this. I'm asking if that is a step we might agree on. Now, with regards to the others, the partisan splits that typically moves from to 75% in the bill, I mean, I ask you, what are we going to do? How are we going to operate government effectively going forward? And, you know, how can we make it work, given the changing demographics that occurred in the state? Now, you know, I used to sit in the chamber, and it looked differently. The aisles were laid out earlier. And this entire row, remember the big rows, was all members of the minority party. I was proud that this desk that I'm sitting at in the old chamber belonged to a great senator from Hudson, Wyoming, who a really good friend of mine, member of the minority party. And I was when the party shift happened in this chamber and this chair became available, I took the chair. I was that good senator passed away, but he was a friend of mine, and I was so proud to have this chair. But it was at the end of a long line, and it wasn't available as a chair in the chamber until the demographics within the chamber changed. They've continued to change. Now instead of being a lone member of the majority party here, I have a buffer zone all the way around me. That wasn't true before. But it has changed. And it's changed in this chamber, and it's changed in Wyoming. For better or for worse, I have my opinions about that, and they're not appropriate here. But how do we reflect this in our boards and commissions? I can continue. It's not correct to just say we need to have an even balance of both parties on all these boards and commissions to get effective ideas, because I don't think that reflects one man, one vote, or one person, one vote within Wyoming. So we have to do something better. This provides more flexibility. But I go back to my original premise, that you could throw that work out completely, but maybe think about retaining the nonpartisan deal for several of the boards, which this committee has done. I think that's a really good idea, frankly. Now, we did take this committee. I'm so proud to be chairman of the Corporations Committee. and the Joint Interim Corporations Committee. We got a lot of new members, and there was a learning curve, but we exhaustively explored this. It was not any partisanship to shove this down anybody's throats, and I will defend the work to the end because that is not what happened. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, on and for the bill. We've got three problems in this area. One is a very practical problem on a number of the boards and commissions. The governor has had real trouble because of the degree to which we have mandated all kinds of splits, divisions. The governor has had real trouble finding qualified candidates that are willing to serve. And we need to do something about that as a practical matter, Mr. Chairman. This bill does. Second problem we've got is the current system discriminates against the members of the majority party by forcing a split that does not reflect the party membership in the state at large anymore. And that needs to be corrected. The third problem, Mr. Chairman, is the one that was identified by our Senate President. There is discrimination against the larger communities, and particularly in the appointment to some of these crucial boards. That, I'll tell you, my experience down here has been that the regional battles that go on are much more contentious, much fiercer than any party battles. And if we tried to fix the partisan discrimination and the geographic discrimination all at once, I don't think you get a passable bill, and then we don't reach the practical problem that the governor can't find qualified appointments. So we picked the easier problem to solve. You could say, yeah, we should have tried to fix the geographic problem, too. You're letting the best be the enemy of the good. If we can fix two out of the three problems, and this bill does, let's fix them. The geographic one will be a battle for another day if anybody chooses to fight it. Once we've got the practical problem, the governor can't find appointees solved. So I would urge us to pass this bill. It's a major step forward. It doesn't solve everything. But I don't know when we've passed legislation that solves everything. We do the best we can, and I think this bill represents that. I urge adoption of the bill.
Are you ready for the question?
No.
Senator Driscoll. Then we will come to Senator Kraft.
Mr. Chairman, thank you very much. On and for the bill. I think we all know in this body that it's been a problem to find good people, and this bill does a good way to address it. One of the things I can tell you that's happened a bunch that I know of, at least up in our country, we've had people change parties so that they could get the appointments. This is a pretty interesting thing. They actually self-fix themselves in a certain way. Our governor picks the best people they can find, and these restrictions have made it tough. And, you know, with that being said, I don't think it matters if they're all one party or all another. Look what we do in here. And I look over at my good friends on the other side over here, and I hope they feel like we treat them with respect all the time, because I do. I have great respect for them, and probably, if anything, they get a greater variance if they're in a minority than they do when they're together. And, you know, I think we're really missing the point, is let's get the best possible people on these boards and not make an issue of politicization. The second part I got to say about is thank you very much to the committee. You guys worked hard, and I think it's really sad that you guys get challenged whether you do good work or not because you're all Republicans. I think that's absolutely should never happen here. I thank you guys for the work you do. The bill had the ability for anybody to come testify at it. I'd like to hear on that whether the other party showed up or not. But we all, regardless of the split of these committees, we all have the chance to come testify. And, you know, if you're worried about it, we all see the bills that are coming. come testify on, but let's not take shots off our floor at our own committees. Thank you.
Senator Kraft.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chairman. I feel like I need to say just a couple of very quick things because there are indeed minorities in this body. There's another really glaring minority in this party, in this particular body, and I represent it. And I do want to go on record as saying that as a member of the minority party and as a member of the minority gender, I have never been treated with anything other than the utmost respect and the utmost courtesy, and I thank you all for that. That means a great deal to me, and I think it's the reason we do good work here. This is a huge issue, and I do commend the Corporations Committee for taking it on because it is huge. But I think there's so much more for us to look at than just the party affiliation. I think gender diversity. The good senator from Natrona County spoke of the importance to look at our geographical areas. This is a monstrous project. And they have made it. They have made us a real effective stab at it. But I'm wondering if we shouldn't take a little more time, look at each board, each commission very individually, very specifically. I'm thinking of a couple of boards that I used to be a member of, and it was real tenuous in terms of profession and geographic location as well as party affiliation. So I understand the problem, but I wish we could look at improving our diversity throughout all of those commissions, maybe individually, as we determine the other really important aspects of this program and all those overlapping requirements that we need to consider. So I would ask for caution in moving this bill forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Lady and gentlemen, are you ready for the question? Question having been called, all those in favor of Senator Case's motion that when the committee of the whole rises to report it, do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 37, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? No?
No.
Senate File 37 has passed the committee of the whole. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Committee of the whole beg leave to rise and sit again at 2:30.
You've heard the motion. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion is carried.
Announcements. Senator Peterson.
Mr. President, your Revenue Committee number 3 will meet in room S-19 in 30 minutes to pick up discuss Senate File 19, Public Funds Investing, and Senate File 17, Notice of Mineral Property Transfer.
Senator Emmer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your Senate Committee at number 5, Agriculture, will meet upon adjournment today and in General Room S-27 to consider Senate File 53, Large Projects, Senate File 31, Omnibus Water.
Senator Christensen.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your Judiciary Committee number 1 will meet Friday, February 12th at 8 a.m. at the Jonah Room, S-18, to consider the following bills. Senate File 10, Firearm Exemption from Execution. Senate File 50, Sexual Assault from the position of Authority. Senate File 46, Asset Forfeiture 1.
Thank you. Senator Rothfuss, would you get the announcement for rules? Senator Von Platern.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your committee number 9, Minerals and Economic Development, will meet Friday about 15 minutes after noon recess, Jonah Room, S-18, to consider files, Senate File 18, Competitive Bid Specification Requirements, Senate File 39, Cease and Transfer Priority List, Senate File 64, Industrial Siting Permit Amendments, and Senate File 65, Patent Trolling.
Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, your committee number 12, Rules, will meet today, Thursday, February 11th, upon adjournment in Jonah Room S-19 to consider the following bills, Senate File 2, Attorney General Opinions, Legislative Request, and Senate File 29, Legislative Participation in State Benefit Plans.
Together with the rules, look at the small print.
My apologies, Mr. President. We will also consider rule changes, Senate Rule 1, Senate Rule 2, and Joint Rule 1.
Thank you very much. Any other announcements? Folks, if you're on the noon tour to these facilities, please leave to this door out here so we can get collected over into the north end of this building, so leave out this door. And no further announcements. The Senate shall stand in recess until 2 p.m. 2:30.